Welcome to Cyber Squatting Law Radio, brought to you by Traverse Cyber Squatting Law, internet lawyers specializing in domain name disputes, resolutions, and all other domaining issues.
Good afternoon, welcome to Cyber Squatting Law Radio. My name is Damien Allen, and joining me today on the phone is Josh Bourne, the president of the Coalition Against Domain Name Abuse, CADNA, and a managing partner at Fairwinds Partners, LLC. Good afternoon, welcome to the program, Josh.
Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure to have you today, sir. Today we're talking about a report that was filed on April 6th from CADNA discussing the anticipated launch of 400 generic top-level domains, or GTLDs, that would cost brand owners worldwide over $746 million. You want to give us a little bit of background on this report, Josh?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. You know, we've been looking forward to writing this report for quite a while because we thought it was necessary to tease out what this new world will really look like. I think that people have been hearing about new top-level domains for a while now. It's been at the forefront of intellectual property concerns on the Internet for about 2 years. And although the insiders at ICANN will tell you that this was always part of the plan, you know, they could look back almost a decade and say that it was part of their MO to ultimately really try to open up the Internet and open up the domain space. And they thought at that time that it was a logical way to do that by expanding the number of extensions out there. So we're coming up on a point where this might actually happen. We waited, though, for some more meaningful statistics to come out of ICANN. I don't know how closely your listeners follow ICANN, but this is the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. They virtually have a monopoly. They are effectively a monopoly on naming and addressing. They generate policies through their constituency meetings, and they leave it to this bottom-up policy development process that includes domain name companies, registries and registrars, for instance. Some intellectual property voices, governments are involved in that as well. But it was only recently that the new TLDs got to a point in that policy development process where ICANN could really query their community and ask specifically which TLDs people were interested in registering. And back in March, they released the results of that. And it looked like there would be 400 generic ones, and this is names like .shopping, .music, or .food, and also some geographic ones that I pile in the generic category, and those include .Africa, .Berlin, .NYC, these types of names. They also found that there is interest in about 100 branded TLDs, and these aren't real examples, but just for instances to give you an idea what that means, .Facebook, .Google, .AOL, those would be examples of branded top-level domains.
So these are extensions that are outside of the regular .com, .org, .net, .biz, .info.
Yep, exactly. And, you know, it's not exactly a completely new phenomenon. It's just what's new is the number of TLDs, 400 generic ones. Over the last 5 to 7 years, we've seen a trickle of top-level domains come out, starting really with .biz and .info and later .pro and .jobs and .coop, .travel, .museum, very more recently .mobi and .tel. And typically the business community and really the public has been able to deal with them slowly over time, you know, maybe one, two, or three new extensions hitting the market in a given year.
What are some of the biggest misconceptions that brands have when it comes to this new TLD launch?
That's a good question. I think that's actually one of the reasons why CADNA took the time to generate some constructive data based on research to help the business community, governments, our lawmakers, and the general public really understand what's going on here. I think before this study was released, while of course there are brand owners, for instance, who knew that there was more to the puzzle than just answering the question, should we, if we're Kodak, for instance, register .Kodak, and why would we do that? You know, would we do it for brand protection, or would we do it in order to redesign how we communicate with our audience on the Internet? And that's been such an important question, I think, for businesses to consider that they hadn't really paid too much attention to what it will mean to them with respect to protecting their brands, extending their brands, what kind of costs they would experience to register names defensively, what it would mean to the global community with respect to new opportunities for cybercrime and other forms of fraud, and what this would all cost in the area of generic top-level domains. So to make it really real, we ran this study to project just exactly how many new domain names global businesses would likely secure and what that's going to cost global businesses.
And on average, if a brand decided to register defensively, how many different registrations would a brand be looking at?
Well, it's a really interesting point. You know, our group called on its combined, you know, 10-year experience for me. Some other people that are involved have been dealing with new TLD launches over the years, have been working with global businesses that, you know, are very risk averse, but at the same time still make very careful choices about what names they register and what they don't. There's always budget is a question. You know, how many names would we like to register? How many names can we afford to register? And, you know, what are the reasons for doing that? And there are a lot of different scenarios that you run into. There's certain companies that are, you know, they might be more of a one-brand company, if you will. Cummins Engine, for instance, who really is only known as Cummins, you know, they might just be concerned about the Cummins name. Another company who they compete with, Caterpillar, they might be very concerned with Cat and Caterpillar. There are other businesses out there, like SC Johnson, for instance, they have a huge list of consumer brands. And so the various types of companies will have different scenarios. I mean, one pharmaceutical company that we talked to, because we really wanted to conservatively project how many names are likely to register, we asked them, how many domains did you register when .eu came about several years ago? And it was in the hundreds in the sunrise period. So when we modeled this, we were very mindful of the various kinds of scenarios out there. And so we set up scenarios, you know, 50% adoption rate across these 400 TLDs, or 75% adoption rate, or maybe a very low level. Maybe a company would be very selective about which TLDs they decided to pre-secure domains in, and aside perhaps just 10% of the new extensions they would register, and the other ones they would ignore. And we also created various scenarios about the number of names they might register, anywhere from one to several hundred. And then we applied a very representative weighting scheme to apply percent probabilities to each of those various categories of likely scenarios. When it all shook out, on average, what we concluded is that a business would register approximately 3 domains per registry for each of the 400 new TLDs that are coming out. And in reality, that's actually quite low. It nets out at only about 3,700 registrations per new top-level domain. So it predicts that not that .music will get 3,700 or that .food will get 3,700, but across this wide variety of new TLDs ranging from okay to very interesting, on average they would get 3,700 new registrations. That in itself is very conservative. It compares to, and this is why we think these numbers really do check out, it compares to 140,000 Sunrise registrations that took place in .eu, and a year later, 15,000 Sunrise applications in .asia. So we're basically saying, look, we project one quarter of the level of adoption that took place in .asia, which is, you know, presumably a pretty huge extension, and that adds up to $746 million in cost to global enterprises, basically to duplicate what they already own and what's already working for them, but just to keep it out of the hands of third parties. So in reality, it could be 4 times that amount. You know, we could be looking at $3 billion in cost to businesses just to extend the protection of their brands and try to reduce the number of instances of fraud that can affect consumers.
Based on your organization's analysis of internet user behavior, how are internet users going to react to the influx of new TLDs?
That's a very interesting point. You know, it's a challenge. We did some research on what's popular today and what's been popular over the last, let's say, decade. And what I did is gathered the 1,500 most popular websites in the world and broke them out and took the amount of traffic that each one gets and then subtotaled the percent volume of traffic by extension. And The results are probably what you would expect. 90% of internet traffic today is going to .com sites. The second most popular extension for websites that get traffic is .org, with just 2.82% of global internet traffic. And the wheels literally fall off after that. You get down to .biz, it's responsible for 0.02 or 2/100th of a percent of internet traffic. And so I think that people that use the internet, more than 1.5 billion people today, unless they're going to country-specific content that they expect to find under their country's ccTLD, right? So this would be .de for Germany or .jp for Japan. They very routinely will think of a name that they want to visit. It might be Gillette and append it with .com. Or, you know, maybe if they're in a city, for instance, even, you know, they might want to know what pizza restaurants are available to them in Toledo. They might type ToledoPizza.com intuitively, right, and see if there's something there that can help them. They are not appending those searches with .net or .org. So you're not going to be able to overnight change consumer behavior just by flooding the market with top-level domains. So we don't think that consumers will readily start picking these things up. In fact, one group, and I can't think of a source off the top of my head, did some surveying and they talked to consumers, and 60% of the consumers that they polled agreed that the new extensions would change the way that they use the internet, but not for the better. They said that 57% thought that it would make the internet more messy and confusing, 46% said it would make it too complex to navigate, 41% actually made the claim that it would be out of control. We're really concerned about that, but at the same time, there could be some interesting new innovative uses of top-level domains, and I don't think that the problem here really is that the internet changes or that it could change and will change. It's the method by which ICANN and its community, they have an imbalance of financial incentives to roll out all these new top-level domains. It's a little bit too chaotic, I think. You know, you open the floodgates, you lower the costs, you lower the vetting process, and the net result is you get a huge inflow of top-level domains that the public just isn't really ready for. And so I think it would be interesting to potentially have a closer look at the potential results of this and rethink that before moving forward. And maybe if I was in charge, I suppose, or a lot of the people that I talk to who agree with me, I think that they would say that a more sustainable approach would be to perform more of a measured release so that there was time to test it and react to what introducing a variety of new top-level domains will do to the internet.
The report says that over $764 million is going to be the cost. Were there other costs that weren't included in the study?
Yeah, of course. You know, all we measured was what is the immediate cost to businesses to register a hypothetical set of domains that would be, you know, a conservative estimate. And that $746 million corresponds to the first two-year period of registration. So we didn't take a present value calculation of what it's going to cost businesses over the next 10 years because it's a little bit difficult to guess how many of those will get renewed. You know, normally what happens is businesses they tend to be conservative. They can't predict which of these top-level domains might take off and which ones won't. Based on recent past history, most of them will fail, but we can't know for sure. And as a result, businesses are inclined to register them when they can get them ahead of the general public. So renewal costs were omitted from this. The other thing that businesses tend to do today in the current environment is they do a fair amount of monitoring. Part of consumer protection, part of protecting their trademark as well, is keeping an eye on what names are registered by third parties that are confusingly similar to their brand or trademark. And the other point that I would raise about costs that weren't included, in addition to the cost of ongoing monitoring, is the enforcement cost. We didn't try to project what it'll cost businesses to go out and get names back from third parties when there is an intolerable use.
With this new gTLD launch, are there any new forms of protection against bad faith acquisition or trademark protection that are being added with the launch? Is there any new system in place to protect people from cyber squatting or bad faith registration?
Well, there are various rights protections mechanisms or RPMs that are integral in the draft guidebook that ICANN is putting together for the new top-level domains. There are ideas around trademark clearinghouses and other ways for brand owners to simplify, but nothing that I have seen is actually going to deter cyber squatting. The idea is mainly to make it easier for trademark owners to register domain names and reduce the complexity of the process of trying to deal with 400 potentially different, distinct, you know, unique processes to secure their brand in a special period called sunrise period when trademark owners have the first opportunity to register their name. Consistent with a lot of ICANN processes, the aim is to sort of respond to the concern of the trademark community, but to do so in a way where the registries and registrars and others who really dominate the ICANN process can still earn their fees. There are some interesting, you know, angles here, too, though, to consider is that cyber squatting could conceivably occur on either side of the dot. On the left-hand side of the dot, you're talking about typos of a brand, registrations under a TLD. On the right-hand side of the dot, you're talking about an actual squatted top-level domain. So, for instance, let's say that a party unrelated to eBay wants to pursue .eBay. Well, there is what appears to be a fairly efficient process conceived that would eliminate that risk to eBay, the online retailer auction site, because they would have an opportunity to object to the application made by this third party. I actually don't predict that there will be a lot of right-hand side of the dot squatting attempted. The costs seem to be high enough to reduce that likelihood. And, of course, the various rights protections and opportunities for brand owners to object to those confusing TLDs exist, that this isn't really going to happen. Overall, though, you know, the CAN organization has two priorities. Our strategy is to seek out reforms to ICANN. We believe that the organization that was created a decade ago might not be the right organization for the next decade. This setup was made at a time where I don't think anybody really could have reasonably predicted just how big the internet would become, how big e-commerce would become, how many opportunities there would be for trademark infringers and squatters to use the trust of a brand name to better perform whatever act of fraud or whatever scheme they wanted to carry out online. I don't think anybody predicted that the domain name business would be a multi-billion dollar industry worthwhile to capture that policy development process at ICANN. And so CAN is very focused on figuring out how ICANN itself can be made more transparent, more accountable, certainly more predictable, and more unbiased, right, to make them a steward of the public interest and the internet. The other side of CAN's mission is to reduce the instances of cyber squatting through potentially some legislative changes that would create a more sizable deterrence to cyber squatting. So outside of what ICANN can do to reduce the instances of cyber squatting and consumer harm that often follows, we think that governments can revise laws or create new laws where they're missing that would serve as a deterrent so that the individuals who actually cyber squat make a better decision based on the potential liability of registering that infringing domain name. And so, give you a for instance, not all cyber squatters are, you know, massive enterprises, huge operations with tens of thousands or 100,000s or even millions of domain names, even though there are squatters on that scale. The vast majority are not, you know, hard criminals. We looked at a set of infringements for a particular company fairly recently. Across 5,000 infringements, when measuring the number of unique registrants across those infringements, the number of domains per unique registrant was just 1.5. And what that means is that there's over 3,000 various parties that own one or more domain across 5,000 infringements. A lot of small timers. And the small timers might be unaware of what liability they carry by owning that domain name. And today, it's either no financial loss that could occur, or given the 10-year-old U.S. statute, a range of statutory damages are available at the judge's discretion between $1,000 and $100,000 per instance. And we think that by simply moving the bar up to $100,000, for instance, will lead to not only potential cyber squatters in .com and the proven space, but also in this conceived of future TLD space, will make better choices. They'll decide it's just not worth it. They won't register as many infringements. They might even review their own portfolios more closely and choose to either delete or not renew at expiry the domains that they own today that infringe on brands. And so it is possible for the huge stack of what we predict to be about tens of millions of infringing domains owned by unrelated third parties to that brand owner could more passively, just by systemic change, be just reduce. And I think that's an important part of, piece of this puzzle, is that I think one of the reasons that brand owners are upset by the domain space, they're upset by, you know, with ICANN and aggravated by the number of infringements, is they often tell me, and I'm sure they tell others, that they feel like they're losing the battle. They feel like they're playing whack-a-mole. They feel like they can't keep up with the rate of infringements. And they're concerned most of all that they can't protect their consumers, their partners, and others that when they see their brand name in a domain, want to trust that domain. It might fall for a scheme or have a bad experience online and blame that brand. So if there's fewer infringements, it's more practical for companies who are virtually tasked alone with policing the internet for uses of their brand and enforcing their rights wherever possible to protect consumers, to actually do that.
What do you think is driving this massive expansion for new domain extensions?
I think that there's this point that ICANN often raises, that expanding the number of TLDs was always part of the plan, which I don't really think is a very good reason, because the internet has changed dramatically, and what might have been a good idea years and years ago might still be a good idea, but maybe it should morph a little bit. I think that the ICANN process is a really interesting thing. You know, there's really no analogous organization that I can think of to ICANN. It's true that they have a bottom-up policy development process, but I believe that process at the bottom is very much overpopulated by domain name industry insiders, right? So effectively, over the last decade, those who have the most to gain by manipulating the outcomes of that policy development process have saturated that environment in order to overpower other types of points of view. And so they effectively can create policy or drive the policy development process in a direction that serves their needs and interests. And, you know, it's clear that any time that a single organization has complete control over a scarce resource like domain names, that it's ripe for capture. And I think that ICANN, in many ways, has been captured. And so as a result of that, they can accelerate certain types of policies that are beneficial, those that will help them raise revenue. And they can also push down, repress policies that are not helpful to their business model. You know, and I look back on what would be extremely beneficial policy changes. One would be to address the problems with who is. According to NORC at the University of Chicago, 77% of domain who is records, this is who is like the telephone book for domain names. You can look in the who is and you can find out who owns a particular domain name. 77% of the names they looked at had defective who is records. A range of types of errors, including, you know, intentionally misleading information. And that who is defect allows, it emboldens cyber criminals in particular to be more aggressive through spamming, through phishing, whatever it is that they do, counterfeit peddling, whatever it is that they do. They're emboldened by anonymity. I mean, you walk into any city hall in America, for instance, and say you want a business license, and when they ask you for your identification, you say, sorry, but I still want my business license, they'd laugh you out of the courthouse or city hall. In the domain space and on the internet, you can hang a shingle and be completely unknown, and that leads to counterparty risk. And consumers that could use the internet to perform more regular commercial transactions aren't doing that as much as they nearly could, because they're afraid that they're going to get taken advantage of because they don't know who it is that they're dealing with and they don't know whether or not they can trust them. So about 2 years ago, ended a two-year review of who is and who is policies to solve that. And I believe it was the IPCU, Intellectual Property Constituency, that was really pushing that. And at the end of that review period, the result was to maintain the status quo, not do anything to affect who is, positively or negatively, just leave it alone. And I believe the reasons why are that any any corrective measure that could be taken to clean up who has information would rely on the registrars. The registrars hold the relationships with the registrants, their customers, the people who own domain names, the people who have the incorrect whois information in the database. And the registrars' cost structure would necessarily be effective, making them less profitable because they would need to staff up. They would need to do things in order to work with their customers to correct that. And I believe they probably also assumed that if the choice of their customer was to either be transparent and be known in the who is or no longer own the domain name, many of them would choose to no longer own the domain name. I mean, once you're known, if you're a bad actor, you have no use for that domain name. That domain name is only good to you if you can be invisible. Now, I mean, it's not that simple. There are also privacy concerns that were a big part of that debate. But the example is, whois is something that was correctable and could have been corrected but wasn't. Whereas new TLD policies, which are also controversial, are marching forward, and it's very predictable what the outcome will be, absent of any reform or, you know, any pressure from the U.S. and foreign governments. They will move forward, and that's because these are incredibly lucrative policies. These are good for registries, registrars, and various kinds of domain name insider companies, such as the entrepreneurs that are most interested in securing a new TLD, which grants them a monopoly to try to sell as many domains as they possibly can. Since they're driving the ship, I think this is why we're seeing new TLDs come in such a hurry. And a lot of people will say that new TLDs haven't moved forward as quickly as they could have, and that proves that they're following a more conservative path. But the reality is that this is all very fast, and most people in the ICANN community would tell you that absent of anything major happening, they will be here next year.
I'd like to thank you for joining us today and discussing this with us, Josh.
Thanks very much for having me. This was a great opportunity, and it was fun to speak with you about it.
I've been speaking with Josh Bourne, the president of CADNA, the Coalition Against Domain Name Abuse, and managing partner of Fairwinds Partners, LLC. You've been listening to Cyber Squatting Law Radio. My name is Damian Allen. Everyone have a great day.
This netcast is powered by Verdeo.net. Verdeo.net, optimizing your brand and web presence worldwide. Verdeo.net, be heard, be seen, be found.